Hey, I'm Derek.
And I am Noah.
And you're... No, that's your part. I stole your part.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And you're listening to A Bite Of.
I was too excited. Where we take our current favorite pop culture obsession and enjoy it one nibble at a time.
One nibble.
I feel like we haven't done this in forever.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's our fifth nibble of Percy Jackson. So much Percy Jackson. Hope you're enjoying it because we've been doing nothing but that.
And I think in the beginning we were like reading the book and we were doing the press and everything. And now it's kind of like, oh, we're just doing this now.
Yeah.
We're just doing the show.
It's like just the show. And it was funny. So side note, the last episode was our last screener we got. We got four episodes for the screener initially. Fantastic. Thank you, Disney.
Thank you, Disney.
We complained on the last episode and we were like, we don't have screeners anymore. We're going to have to watch it and release this later. Like somebody on Twitter was literally like, did I miss your guys' episode? I'm like, no, we just don't have screeners.
We're not cool anymore.
And then literally this afternoon, Disney was like, oh, here's the screeners for 6, 7, and 8. I'm like, what? Why not 5?
They're like, it's too late for 5. We already know it's too late for 5.
So... our episodes are going to go back to when they were. We're going to release them the day the episode gets released, Wednesday. So there you go. That's that.
Back on our original schedule.
Also, thank you, Disney. I'm curious if you're listening. So sorry that we complained, but also thank you.
maybe someone from Disney, you know, said follow.
Well, Becky listens to us. So, you know, hi, Becky.
Hi, Becky. Hi.
Okay.
Oh. Happy New Year.
This episode has a lot. There's a lot to unpack with this one. Before we get into that, we had to do housekeeping stuff, right?
Yeah.
We've gotten some new reviews. Thank you, thank you, thank you for those. Still on our way to 200. So if you're listening to us on any app where you're allowed to do reviews, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever else, I can't name them all, just go down there and give us reviews and make sure you're following us. That way you can actually get alerts when we release them how we used to on Wednesdays. But that's really it. Patreon, you know, we're going back to covering our Before the MCU this month, so that's gonna be fun.
All right, so spoiler alert for this episode, because things happen in this episode,
just one or two
that are like pretty great, so if you don't want us to spoil it for you, don't watch it. But let us officially take a bite of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, episode 5, A God Buys Us Cheeseburgers, directed by Jett Wilkinson and written by Rick Riordan and Jonathan E. Steinberg. Percy drives off and notices that the authorities are after him. He and his fellow questers get to Steppen to escape the spotlight. A leather-clad god intercepts the trio and offers them sustenance and a side quest. The Tunnel of Love becomes a Tunnel of Terrors, leading to Percy becoming the Golden Boy. Annabeth denounces the way of the gods, impressing the god of craftsmen, leading them back to the leather-clad god, who sends them on their way with animals to another god.
Bravo.
Grazie, grazie.
Also, I really liked you calling him the Golden Boy.
Was that a little too evil?
No.
Or just right on the money?
It was right on the money. I do want to amend something from the last episode, or not amend, just I think it's crazy we didn't mention it, right? We watched the fourth episode as a screener. The screener, because it's on the laptop and just the way it is, it's a little darker. Mm-hmm. So the final scene in the last episode where we see the water spirit talking to Percy, we did not realize that it was like a jellyfish thing.
And watching it the second time, she reminded me of the very sexy ladyfish.
From Shark Tale?
Yes.
Yep. I have that in my notes.
She had that hair going on. And I said, okay.
Yeah, I like it. I think the interpretation is great. I know in the book it was like, is that my mom? Like, you couldn't really tell because it's disgusting in there.
And the trauma.
Right. But yeah, so it was a jellyfish thing. It's cool. I just thought it was weird we didn't mention that because it is so odd.
Well, you know what? It was murky and blurry and dark, and maybe we weren't supposed to. So I think our eyes were perceiving what they could at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So mayhem at the arch. Mm-hmm. I love the shots of the camera coming out of the water, showing the arch on fire. Fantastic shots here. We see Annabeth and Grover surrounded by mayhem. Cops are looking at them. People that were in the arch were looking at them. Annabeth sees the Fates. Grover sees the authorities. The Fates cut the thread, which is not good. Any Greek story you know, and Fates are involved. If you've seen Hercules, same concept.
The middle Fate dead eyes Annabeth.
With her little tiny ponytail.
Oh, yeah. She's like, watch this, baby. I love the three of them, these three old women with their yarn and their scissors, who are sitting like in basically lawn chairs while the arch is on fire.
Like, I'm sure they just appeared, right?
Yes.
But it's such a funny visual to be like, oh yeah, this is just old ladies knitting and just watching the commotion.
Yeah, you know, they're retired. So this is how they spend their days, just looking for disasters to sit by. They have like a little police patrol thing that they listen to.
Police scanner. Yeah.
That's the word.
Do you think, so Annabeth tells Percy and Grover later on that it's an omen, right? That, you know, cutting the thread is an omen that somebody's going to die or something bad's going to happen. Do you think that we've seen it already or it is yet to come? Because he gets turned to gold,
yeah,
right?
So that would be the thing that I would say, ah, yes, that's when he was dying or died. But when I think about the book, right, they're there and the same thing happens. And this whole golden boy scene does not happen in the book.
No.
So if we're basing it on the book, the death has not occurred yet.
Or, yeah, something.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm assuming, right? It could, but I would almost say they're going to have to, like, not make it known, but like, oh, this is the thing. You know what I mean? Because I feel like with adding that extra thing, could that have been interpreted as that's what they were talking about?
Yeah. And, you know, I have to be honest. I don't know enough about the mythology behind the Fates, where it's something similar to the Oracle, where it's like not necessarily a premonition, but a warning in a way.
I mean, I think a lot of times the gods and whatever, they're all in riddles.
So it's not like,
as straightforward.
Like the Fates were just like, ooh, Hades is really mad. Let's go cut some cord, baby.
Or they're just like, I just need to. I'm
Maybe
done
they
with
were
this
just
part.
Really, they just finished the sock.
And they weren't even Fates.
No, they were just truly three old ladies. And that one old lady knew that those kids were bad news.
Yeah. So they go and find Percy. But I did want to point out that we finally got, because we had questioned like, okay, are the authorities going to be after them and all that? So this confirms that the authorities, FBI, everybody's going to be after these three, the mortal world. And we also get to see Smelly Gabe talking about them on the news and him crocodile tears about everything, blaming him for his mother's disappearance. He was more upset about the Camaro.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I love that he has that slip up where he says, we really love that car. You know
Stupid.
What? And I bet you he was still wearing sweatpants.
Oh.
Even though he had a tie on.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell that he had not taken that suit out in a while.
That was a Zoom call. So he was still doing the same thing as his online gambling.
He had the poker right next to him. So when they finally reunite, Annabeth going to Percy and hugging him, and they linger on the hug, and Percy looks like he's like, oh, this is nice.
What does this mean for our friendship? Is this a friendship or more? I personally wanted Grover to get in on the hug.
But
I wanted the two of them to be like, Percy!
No, this is Annabeth and Percy's episode.
That's true.
So Grover had to break it out because he's like, this is going on a little too long.
Yeah. He's like, so they're after us. This is lovely, but we gotta go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love when they're finally on the road, right? And they're walking. There's plenty of like Percy and Annabeth moments in this. So like, we have a lot to talk about with that. They're on the road, right? And Percy, I feel like the more the episodes go on, the more Percy is very Percy.
Mm.
He's talking about it and he's like, you know, I don't, this quest must be harder than we realize. Like, how deep does this go? And they're like, yeah. Like, are you just realizing this? Yes, he's just realizing that.
They have, listen, they have to be nice to him. He's not been a part of this world. I said that in the last episode, and they need to just leave him alone.
Yeah.
He's figuring things out at his own speed.
Yeah.
I did like that he says to them, like, we need to like dig deeper. We need to be detectives. And I feel like in this episode, they all have like their own little detective moment.
Grover takes it to a whole new level.
Oh, Grover is going full Dick Tracy gumshoe. Like, I feel like if he had like a little cigar, he'd be like, yeah, I love the lobster war.
Yeah, he was playing the Queen's Gambit with Ares the whole time.
He loved it. Your move, counter move. He knew exactly what he was doing.
I like that he thought that far ahead, but I think he did take that detective part too far. Not too far, but like he was like, okay, this is my chance to shine, guys.
I'm playing a role. I'm 24 years old. Let's do this.
We finally got the line where he's like, I'm 24. Oh, so good. Also, next episode, he should be driving the car, not a 12-year-old.
He's taking his young friend out for his learner's permit. He's teaching him how to drive.
So Ares comes onto the scene. I love the part where they're behind the guardrail or the cement blocks, whatever they're called. I actually don't know what those things are called.
I don't know what they're called either.
If you know, let us know.
Big old block things.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not even blocks. Weird.
Yeah, they're cement dividers.
That's actually probably right.
It's guardrails?
I think you were right the first time. When they finally realize that Ares is Ares and they all peek their heads over, it's just like a classic kid thing.
Yes.
It's so good.
So this is really was a Percy Annabeth episode, but Grover had such great moments in this. The Grover comedy in this just had me like, you know, chef's kiss. I love when Ares first pulls up and Grover's like, beg pardon? And then he goes like, so long. Yeah. Like, we're fine. So long.
He's like crouching back down and he's like, no, thank you. It's so long. So good.
I love it.
The comedic timing of them is so good.
Yeah.
I did want to mention before we like get into the diner that Percy, again, being himself, Annabeth is like going through some things, right? In this episode alone, she goes through a lot of growth. She's like now finally friends with Percy. She's starting to question the gods and like how everything interacts. And he takes that as, oh, was this because we hugged? Like, it doesn't have to be a big deal. We're friends now. That's what friends do. Percy.
She's like, Percy, I have no time for your trivial prepubescent nonsense. Okay. I saw the fates threatening us with death. And he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't the hug, but maybe it was the hug a little bit.
You're cute, but you're dumb. Like, that's all you can say with Percy. Like, you're cute, but you're dumb. Just like.
He's courageous.
Yeah. We also do find out one, Adam Copeland, AKA Edge, fantastic in this episode, looked menacing. I'm sad that he doesn't have his long hair anymore. That was his trademark, but. That's from my WWE days, I believe. He like started in the 90s.
Yeah, we're going back.
Yeah. Very good. I was more of a Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of guy, but like Edge was fine. He was edgy.
I wasn't into the WWF when it was called the WWF before it was called the WWE. I liked it when Hulk Hogan was there, The Undertaker, like way, way back when I was younger. But then my best friend, Melissa, who was on the episode when we talked about Midnight Sun, she was a big WWE fan.
I could see that. She says brother a lot.
And she used to do the suck it thing a lot.
Didn't we all though?
I didn't.
I don't believe that.
No, I was a lady.
Melissa.
I'm telling you, I used to just watch. I would support them. They would go to like the local like fan greeting events for the wrestlers.
I mean, I grew up in the South, so it was, yeah, we wrestled in the backyard too. It was a big thing.
I was too gentle of a soul.
He's great though in this.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
I don't think he's been in anything in a while. This is his like comeback almost.
Even though he didn't have the skin motorcycle.
Okay. So one of the changes they did from the book, if you listen to our episodes on that, was the description of his bike was that it looked like it had Caucasian skin on it. And I was like, oh, we're not doing that. Okay. We're not doing that. I do feel like with Ares, this is like one of my only critiques with this episode is that like the descriptions for him, right? When he's in the diner, he seems to be like be able to command the room and he like makes people angry or whatever. And he has like fire and bombs in his eyes and he's riding a Caucasian skinned motorcycle. And it's like, we didn't really get any of that. It didn't have to be like Caucasian skin, but like something more like I'm the god of war, you know?
No, I'm with
it
you.
It almost felt like because we were mortals, we were just seeing what we would have seen.
Like there could have been like big exhaust pipes on the back that shot fire out of them or something.
Or is that too much? Is that too on the nose?
I just liked his trench coat.
Yeah.
It was very long and it flipped in the wind. I love now that with the invention of social media, this is another thing that really gets Ares going. Because when they first get to the diner, he's hysterical laughing. He's like, I'm just starting a fight on Twitter.
Him being a Twitter troll is the most Aries thing ever.
He must live for it. Oh, it must make him so happy. He just probably just pisses everyone off. Doesn't matter who you are, what you're talking about. He will just automatically troll you.
Oh, yeah. I love that there's like a meme or a trend going around. It's been going around for a while where it's like it has a character and it has like the bubble half of it. Mm-hmm. And people will quote tweets with that. And now there's one of Aries and people are like putting stuff that have to do with like people calling it Perkabeth instead of Persabeth. And it's like,
it's hilarious.
Aries is the one that's causing all this drama.
Oh yeah. It's see, when we, sometimes we think too big about war. War can be on Twitter.
He's doing it all the time.
The question is, what is Aries' handle? Or does he just have a bunch of troll accounts that he just uses?
War dude 666.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Bloodshed.
Skin cycle.
Oh no. That didn't sound good. I don't like that one. Let's cut that one out. No, thank you.
We're just spitballing here.
Yeah. So when they're in the diner, I love that they found the right one, right? But I love that Annabeth like doesn't give a shit. And she just keeps like jabbing at him the whole time, even the eyebrow raise that she does. And he's like, it was cute for a little bit, but like, knock it off. And she doesn't. She keeps going.
I think that that brother-sister relationship between Ares and Athena was passed on to Annabeth.
She can't help it.
And they just look at him as like, this guy. Here he goes, talking big always.
So the I love everything that happens in the diner, especially with Grover and Ares, but in the short time that all of them are together, we do find out that, Zeus sent everybody out to go look for the bolt. Mm. Ares tells him, oh, you don't think that a war is happening? Zeus is going to go to war with Poseidon. This is what we do. The gods always go to war. Even if there isn't one, he knows that there's one coming. So why not? Which I think is really interesting because it's like, no matter what they do, so this puts like a wrench in their plan, right? Is there going to be war? Doesn't matter what the Oracle said, because even Ares, he could have been trying to start something, but is he right? He's like, is that what Chiron told you?
Mm-hmm.
What did the Oracle actually say? Like,
right.
you know,
this part of it might just be that he's stirring the pot. But also I think that what we see here, which I think is a thread throughout the rest of the episode, is breaking the Olympian family cycle.
Eesh.
Right. And so we see that through the rest of this, especially when they get to the amusement park, about how the Olympians treat each other and how they're willing to backstab each other and throw each other away just for their own greatness or just even because it's a Tuesday. And so this is Ares kind of saying and planting that seed for us as the audience, saying like, this is what Olympians do. And no matter what, there's just going to be war.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is what they do. Right. But I love this, like, this tension and this conflict of like new and old gods, meaning like the new one are these generation and the old gods, or even just like monster versus monster. Like, who is the actual monster in this thing? Is it the gods that we're supposed to worship? Yes.
Right.
But like, I love this whole ideal being presented in this way, with also subtle things of like our real world stuff. Like, because this is happening in Olympus, this is how it affects the real world. Pan is gone. Pollution is running rampant and humans are killing the earth. It's very smart. And I think it's a natural way to tell these stories and make it a little more believable.
Mm.
I like that a lot. So Ares says, I'll help you if you retrieve my shield from an amusement park nearby. Sure. He keeps Grover as collateral, which is smart, so they don't run off. Gotta say, he's a god of war. He knows how to make deals and he knows when people are being sneaky. He's very smart with this. I do also want to talk about their food situation for like 2 seconds.
I would love to talk about it.
Because there was too much. There was burgers on burgers and towers of fries. Didn't really look like anybody touched anything, but like poor Grover, because in another scene we get, there's like steaks.
Ugh. And a milkshake. I don't even know if he does dairy. Probably not. I think he's vegan.
Maybe. Oh, that's a good question. Will he do? Yeah. Cause it's like, well, I guess how they get it, right? He probably wouldn't do it from like a diner, but maybe at Camp Half Blood if they make butter or something.
Or like maybe he just does smoothies with almond milk.
Oh yeah. Blech.
Wow.
I'm just
okay. Some of us are lactose intolerant, you included.
I am too, but I do lactate because I can't do those nut milks. I can't.
Watch it. Don't make me bring up the skin cycle again. No, what I wanted to talk about is how do you order hamburgers so they come in a mountain and not on separate plates?
You tell them, I want all the hamburgers.
I want a pile of burgers and a mountain of fries.
No, what you heard is
all
of them, but I want every burger you have in the estate. He Ron Swanson'd it to get all the burgers on one single plate.
I think what I'm trying to get at is someone tell me how to go to a diner and order a mountain of French fries. Not an order of French fries, a mountain of French fries.
I think you have to be the God of War to like make them do that.
Got to have that pull. I don't have that pull. I could order two separate things of fries and just pop them on top of each other.
So before we get to the amusement park, Waterworld, Tunnel of Love and all that, let's talk about Ares and Grover, because their scenes kind of happen throughout this episode. But I think we should just sit with it for a little bit because we're already here.
We're just going to put them together.
We're already seated. Like we said, Grover's playing chess.
Yes. And Grover is ready for this conversation. When Ari says he wants to keep him as collateral, he's like, yep, cool, let's do this. Bye, guys. Go. So Grover has formulated this plan very quickly.
Yeah, he's upping his ego, which he knows that will get his attention. He kind of weaves this thing of like, well, I saw you at the Winter Solstice. Who could have snuck in and gotten the bolt? Somebody that would stand up to Zeus and doesn't care? Somebody that could be gone and not missed? Who do you think that is? And he also drops a line of like, it doesn't matter who did it. Zeus thinks Percy did it. And that's what matters. And so it kind of gets Ares' gears turning here. But I'm not sure if Grover has it figured out. You know what I mean? Like, does he think that it's Clarice? That like, that's my feeling I got from this. Like, does he think that Clarice was the one that did it? Or, I'm not going to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, do you think he actually knows who did it?
I'm thinking he's thinking it's someone like Clarice. Mm-hmm. I think that that's where his mind is going, because there's also a part in these scenes where Ares shows what shitty parents the gods are once again by saying, oh, the solstice, I got to sit there and they present the things to me and it's so boring. And so maybe in Grover's mind, he's saying, well, what would a child of a god do to try to impress them even more?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's leading him to someone like Clarice.
Yeah, I mean, because I loved how he talked about kids. I mean, it's shitty. And I think we know that the gods are shitty to their kids. But like, he was like, my knees hurt. What are butterflies for? And I'm like, exactly.
What are butterflies for?
Or maybe he said like, where are they from? But either way, it just like.
But it's like kind of funny. It's like, if you think my knees hurt, that's like an old person.
Right.
And then someone asking what are butterflies for? Where are they from? That's like a child. So yeah. He just hates all his children, no matter how old they are.
Which also begs the question of like, one, I do think that you're on, like, I think it's on the right track for Grover to think that, because it's like, Clarice got the spear from Ares. So it's like, how would she be in his favor? That kind of makes sense. But like, I think he's wrong. You know, I personally think.
Grover.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we have to wait until next episode to see who he really thinks it is. But I mean,
let us know.
It's a little early.
Yeah. Comment below. See, what do you think? Do you think he's wrong? Do you think he's right? Who knows?
Will Grover say, I know who it is? And they go, who? He goes, I'm not going to tell you.
Also, him saying Athena with her owl best friend. So good. I love the lighting in this situation. There was a moment when he finally puts down the phone and is more invested in the conversation. and the light is kind of shining above him. Mm. So it makes his face just kind of how his face is, but like it makes it a lot more menacing with mm-hmm. the light being directly going down. So good.
Do you think that Ares knows the game that Grover's playing right now?
I don't think he does. Mm. Because he even talked about satyrs being like hippies and protesters and like you sing about whatever. I don't think he takes them seriously. Mm. So I think it's perfect for Grover to be like, I got him.
Yeah.
Or at least to ask him questions. And he kind of played into his hand because there was a moment where I was like, Ares might know what he's doing, but he didn't. He didn't. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he did. He definitely let Grover, you know, fill him with hot air.
Yeah. There was a moment where he's really riling him out and the music was just getting like chaotic. And I was like, ooh, cool. Mm-hmm. I like this. Okay. So on to Waterworld, because I think that's really the majority of their conversations.
Waterworld.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful Waterworld. Haunting.
Well, listen, haunting. Percy's like, wow, this place is great. It looks like, you know, an amusement park in a movie. I just want to say this place is run down.
It's scary.
It's terrible.
No. Annabeth liked it. Percy didn't like it because he said, this looks like the place in horror movies. Like, I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And then that's when we get the devastating line of Annabeth never have seen a movie. She was 7 when she left home. She didn't see any movies. Are you kidding me? What kind of parents?
Well, we know. We know.
If you could introduce Annabeth to her first movie, what would it be?
I'd have to go Disney.
I mean, you don't have to, but probably.
You gotta go Disney.
Yeah.
You know? But what Disney movie?
I don't know. I'm asking.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you think she'd want to see Hercules? No, she knows about all that stuff, and she'd probably be spotting all the inaccuracies.
You know what I think?
Tell me.
Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Right?
Machines.
Right?
Scientists. Superhero kids.
Devastating.
Yeah, she's used to that. She probably won't be moved.
No. Or like an architectural documentary. She might like that too. I don't know any. But
this
like,
is how the Empire State Building was built.
Yeah. But those are my guesses, at least for her. Let us know. On Spotify, that will be our question for this episode. What movie would you introduce Annabeth to for the first time?
Yeah,
does not have to be Disney.
She's 12. Yeah, because I guess I was thinking if she were younger, but 12-year-olds like Disney movies.
We like Disney movies.
I like Disney movies.
We're literally pretty much talking about a Disney movie.
I just kind of want to end the episode and really just think about what movie I need to really think about it.
Yeah.
Ghosted on it.
We did an episode on that, and I'm still not happy about it.
No, we never will be.
No.
We never will be.
Also, our Letterboxd wrap, because like we forgot to log something, it showed that as the first movie for us in 2023. And I was like, for fuck's sake, I can't get away from Ghosted.
It was our number one.
So Annabeth not seeing a movie. They go through the turnstiles. And I love this scene because Percy is like scared he's about to die. And Annabeth is just admiring the craftsmanship of this. It's so good. There's so much that happens in this episode where it's like, these are the base level of these characters. Like, this is the thing that you can always assume that they're going to do. Annabeth is going to appreciate the craftsmanship and try to figure things out. And Percy's going to be getting himself into those traps.
Yeah. He's just always going to be leaping before he looks. Yeah. And you know, I think that's the difference, right? Is that him seeing these turnstiles, he's grown up only as a human, right? With his human side, you just go through them. Whereas Annabeth, who has grown up only in the godly world, is seeing like, maybe we should stop and think before we take a step.
Agreed.
You know? And so it is kind of funny because he's standing there because at first she's panicking, telling him that it's celestial bronze, which will kill him. And then she's like really just thinking and admiring it and feeling it and like, just like, I'm going to figure this out. And he's like, what am I doing? Why am I standing here?
She's like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And she's like, Annabeth.
She's like, just go through it. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I love that it's a test right out the gate, literally.
Ba-dum-cha.
And also, they're walking through the park, which is creepy as fuck. And she's like, have you ever seen anything like this? And I love how Percy skirts over that question. Because he probably would be, yeah, I've seen an amusement park before, but she hasn't. She really hasn't been in the real world. So I don't know if it was a choice or like they just decided not to answer it. But I took that as him trying not to seem like she's been like excluded from things.
Yeah.
I kind of like that line. And I like how they put together that Ares and Aphrodite met at Hephaestus's park, which is so stupid. Why would they do that?
Tunnel, oh, love. Ugh,
why would they do that in his own park? Disgusting.
I think they did it on purpose. They said, let's rub it in his face.
Probably.
They're so rude.
Shall we get to the tunnel of love?
Say it right. Thrill ride, oh, love.
I don't think that's what it was in the book, was it?
No, I don't think so either.
Okay.
But that's like, what it's here. And it's a neon.
Right.
Oh, I like that it's oh, love.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it too. I liked the design. I'm going to say I loved this more than the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the book, they got rid of Grover really quick because the shoes went, blah, blah, and he went away. And it was like kind of like just in like a empty pool
like
situation.
An empty basin, yeah.
The only difference between the book and this one that I think is of note is that Hephaestus set this as a trap for Ares and Aphrodite. Because in the middle of this pool in like a boat was his shield and Aphrodite's scarf. And there was cameras. Spiders are involved. That's where we find out that children of Athena are scared of spiders. And he's streaming this to Olympus.
Reality TV.
Yeah, that doesn't happen here, which I think is interesting for them to cut out. But I like what we got instead.
Yeah, because this led to a lot more character growth. It led to a bonding moment between Annabeth and Percy. And it introduced us.
To Hephaestus.
To Hephaestus.
So they're in the boat going into the Tunnel of Love. I'm not going to call it the other one because I keep forgetting what it's called. Tunnel O Love. I don't know. And what is love? Plays.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt
Did you notice that in the silhouette character, one of them was doing this?
I absolutely did.
Night at the Roxbury.
Night at the Roxbury, baby. Bam, bam.
And what a way for us to be aged by a 12-year-old. It is insane.
This was a hit.
He said, I've heard this before, maybe in an orthodontics office. They play old music.
Oh, yeah. The lightest of hits.
He was born in like 2009?
I don't know. No. So I don't understand how people are born in the 2000s. Yeah.
I have two brothers that were born in the 2000s.
Yes, my brother-in-laws. born in the 2000s.
You know them.
I know them. Yeah, I've met them.
Oh, we were aged. It was like a knife to the heart. But I loved this way of doing exposition, right? Of showing Hephaestus' story between his mother and his love and Ares and everything. It was really smart. And then we got more conversation of like, Percy at the beginning of the episode was like, oh, my dad helped me. Like, maybe things aren't as bad. And then he questions his mother in this moment too. He's like, this is what she was stopping me. This is like what she was trying to warn me about, right? Mm-hmm. She was telling me about this stuff. She should have prepared me better.
Yeah.
And I love that Annabeth's response is, I think she was preparing you so that way you're not like this.
Exactly.
Preparing you with love and kindness.
That's me, baby.
Sally Jackson.
Hello, it's me. SJ.
We still have to get the Poseidon and Sally backstory that we're going to show. They're going to show, not us. We're going to act it out. Because we know that from the press that we did, that they said that there's scenes without Percy's point of view. And the Grover and Ares was one of them. And Sally and Poseidon is one of them. So I'm very excited to see that.
I wonder if that's going to happen when he actually meets Poseidon. And Poseidon's like, I met your mother. And then it's a flashback. Exactly.
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah. So the tunnel of love turns into the tunnel of hell and starts going. Wee, 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 wee.
Oh, heck yeah. There's a drop.
Yeah. That goes into like.
They could have died.
Yeah. They were going to die. Set design here. Just want to like point out for 2 seconds. Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I love the lighting in here. I love the lighting of the neon when they went in. I love that like when they find where the shield is, it's like I don't know, it was like mixed with carnival and old. Fantastic.
Yeah, they are putting these kids through the ringer for this series. I remember when we saw the behind the scenes clip of when they were filming the car chase with the Minotaur, those kids were really in a car spinning around. So I have to wonder what Walker and Leah had to go through for this scene
in a boat
being wet, probably being dropped a bit.
This scene, like coming up, and they acted their asses off
oh.
for
Yeah.
Being as young as they are. I didn't want to interrupt that. And they had to have been wet for hours.
Disgusting.
Especially Percy. Began the episode wet, ends the episode wet.
And, you know, you have to wonder, it's like, you're wet, but then you're probably surrounded by tons of lighting. Mm-hmm. So you're like, hot and wet?
It's somebody's job to just keep spraying him.
Spritzing you? But you're not, like, you're not, you don't need refreshing.
Well, I know you're that soggy. What do they do? Sometimes they like fake it without them actually being wet is like what they use, like some type of solution and stuff.
Oh.
I mean, I do remember seeing like them spraying him. So obviously there's droplets, but like, you know, sometimes they'll use like Vaseline and that way it looks kind of like wet.
Yeah.
He looked wet. Like he actually looked like he was soaking wet.
Something else that I noticed is that his eyes were very red.
Mm.
I think underwater acting. Like he opened his eyes probably in the pool and his eyes got irritated.
They're like, damn it, Percy or Walker.
You're supposed to be like immune to water. Yeah. You're supposed to love it.
So a choice is being made here, right? We see the machine. How does this machine get turned on? Somebody has to sit in the seat and the shield drops.
Mm-hmm.
They know, Percy knows of this chair. See, I like that the conversation before, it's like, my mom should have prepared me. Oh, I know what this chair is. She was preparing
you. She prepared me.
Yeah.
Percy.
So it was made for Hera, all this stuff. And Hephaestus had to get Hera out. I love this scene. I love everything about it. I love that Annabeth is going to immediately say, I'm going to go into it. And he's like, no, we get Annabeth saying seaweed brain for the first time. She says, this isn't the arch seaweed brain. You're not going to push me aside.
Oh, and sorry to jump out of the scene, but we also got Grover dropping the lightning thief.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. He did name the book. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Okay, go back into Tunnel
sorry.
Of
Love. We're back.
We're back. Hyped that she said Zeebee.
Yes. But this moment of the two of them standing there talking to each other, trying to convince the other one that they should be the one to sacrifice themselves was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought they did such a phenomenal job in this scene.
I love that he called back why he chose Annabeth in the first place.
Mm.
He reminded her. He was like, no, it is like this because the reason why you're here is because I know you would sacrifice me if it was to complete the quest.
Mm-hmm.
Which like, I like it said in this instance. And not initially, because initially it was like, ow.
Yeah.
Rude.
Initially it was more like, who would turn their back on me and it would be you.
Because he then follows it up with, you're better at this than I am. You know that you're better at this than I am, which is really sweet and kind of humbling. And he knows that, well, my story ends with me sitting in a chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's the thing about Percy is that Percy is never trying to be anything other than who he is.
The best. Or any, no, like, I mean, but yes. He's not striving for the glory and right. All of that stuff.
He knows exactly who he is. He knows that she's smarter and better at these things than him. And he's not going to feign any of that kind of machismo, I can do anything.
Right.
He knows exactly who he is and he's okay with that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, his fatal flaw is sacrificing himself and leaping in front of whoever he cares about without fully thinking through.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing is, in this situation, it's good that he did.
Right.
Because Annabeth would be the one to figure out how to get him out of it.
Yeah.
I love the conversation of, like, right before he sits in the chair, he's, like, gonna say something. And she's, like, I'll get your mom from the underworld. And he's, like, but also, like, when this is done, could you, like, swing back?
Get me?
Yeah. And she's, like, you'd have to ask.
Yeah. And then when he sits down and he's, like, I can't get up. And then he just keeps saying, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. It's like he's just trying to convince himself that he's okay. Woof.
It's so sad.
Yeah. Like, it was really sad.
I know he wasn't going to die, but like we had no idea what was happening because it's so different from the book, which I love that they did this. And like him saying, I'm okay, he's comforting her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one being turned to gold. Ugh. And that last, I'm okay, he looks like he's like, I'm not okay. But I'm saying I'm okay. And he tries to say it one more time and it gets cut off. And I was like, okay, he's a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
It's so sad. Leah, Sava Jeffries killed it.
Yeah.
This was her. I love that in this episode, each one of them really got their moment to shine. Grover got his moment to shine with Ares. Annabeth gets to shine not only by herself and with Percy, but in front of another god.
Mm.
The entrance of Hephaestus. I mean, oh my God.
I love
fantastic.
I love the calmness of just having turned someone to solid gold, forever trapped in a chair. And he's like, can I help you?
Do you need to get out?
Yeah. Why are you here?
Yeah.
I don't know you.
Which is clear that like he set it for Aphrodite and Ares, but like I don't think he cares who goes into it, right? It's like this is his playground and they just happen to go into it. Like he probably could have stopped it at any point.
Oh yeah.
And he didn't. I love that, like, even though Percy and Annabeth agreed that, like, okay, you're going to go save my mom and then try to come back here and save me, but keep going, she decides not to.
Yeah.
Which I think a couple episodes ago, she probably would have if Percy and Annabeth weren't Percy and Annabeth, right? And this is her growing. This is her finding somebody, a found family, somebody that she really cares about, and also questioning everything. She's like, oh, there's gears and stuff. Like, why not let me try to figure out how to get him out now? Because the shield's out. So good. So, so good. Then we have the conversation with Hephaestus and Annabeth. Oh my God, I couldn't remember a name. And I just said it 10 times. But I love this conversation. I wrote this in my notes because I just want to say it like how I wrote it, because it's how I felt. I love that Hephaestus is waiting to see if Annabeth would choose Percy over glory and power and personal gain, because no one ever chose him, not his mother or his wife.
Mm.
And I think that he sees, after she says, my mother's like this, Ares is like this, all the gods are like this, he's not like that, and I don't want to be like you guys anymore. And I think he's saying, okay, this is a good way to be.
Again, it's breaking that cycle.
Oh, so good.
And that's what he always needed.
Yeah.
He needed someone to not be a total dirtbag. And that never happened for him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like you said, his wife cheated on him in his building, in the place that he built.
He got thrown off of Mount Olympus.
Yeah.
Like,
And so nobody ever chose him over glory or over what they ultimately wanted. So seeing the selflessness of Annabeth, who is the child of Athena, who is wisdom and power and in a sense glory, that moves him.
Yeah. And she even calls out her mom in this scene, which I think is big for her, right? I don't think that she would invoke their names without really meaning it. And she did. She named multiple gods in this thing. I love that in the end he decides to free Percy, right? And then he's like, you're a good kid, Annabeth. Like you did good. I'll tell your mom. I'm like, I'll put in a good word for you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Timothy Olmanson. I also, like, I'm just going to say, I don't know who's playing Aphrodite. I don't think they ever said. I don't think she shows up in this. But Aphrodite is cheating on Craftsman Daddy for Edge.
She likes a real bad boy, apparently. She said, Silver Daddy, no thanks.
That beard, great.
And also his little, like, flute.
Oh, yeah. It was very Willy Wonka.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very Wonka-in. Wonkanian.
Very Wonka.
There you go. That's fine.
Wonkonian. Yeah.
But he literally does that in the original Willy Wonka. He plays something. And then he's like, take the mother to the squeezing room or whatever. To the fudge factory.
He does do that. I love it. I love a good musical, mechanical magicness. So good.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But like, what do we think? Like, this is so much development for these two characters in particular. We know Persephone is a thing, right? It's a thing. Like, if you're on social media, that's kind of not spoiled for you, but it's like, it's a thing. If you listen to our episodes, Rick Riordan talks about how, like, this is a slow burn. Mm-hmm. Like, there is 5 books of this building to this thing.
Well, again, they're 12.
I'm rereading it. I'm in book 4. I just met Hephaestus for the first time, and Persephone still isn't a thing.
Well, I'm, you know, we all know my memory is terrible with like full plot points of things. But when I remember reading these books, I never even thought Persephone was a thing. Yeah.
It's read very it again. Subtle. Like when it actually happens, like, of course, when you finish the book, you're like, oh, okay. Like all those things building up to it. But that's what's so great about it. Right. Because I think even in this, right, it's like, I wouldn't say it's like romantic love. I think like the adolescent feelings of like, oh, a girl's hugging me and like, this is nice. You know what I mean? I think right now they're doing a really good job of showing this friendship really come together and for them to truly care about each other, which you need to do.
Yeah. And I think that this episode was really successful for a number of reasons. And one of those reasons is that it balanced a lot and it did it well. Mm-hmm. We had character development, we had action, and we had espionage on top of it, you know? And so, and I think that we really had a really good serving of all of those. And it was enjoyable to watch because the kids really shone in this episode.
It's insane that like each episode, like I feel like we're watching them grow up within these episodes, right? It's like, they seem so young in the first episode and the second episode. And now they're, even though they're actually maturing, they just seem older. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've heard Percy's voice crack or change just a little bit a few times. Like,
you know, I have to say they're a really fantastic cast, but there were a couple of, especially when he's talking to Annabeth about why he's going to sacrifice himself, you could really see the acting chops of Walker Scobell. Ugh. He's such a fantastic Percy, and he really leads the trio well.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see, like, I mean, we haven't gotten season two yet. I'm sure there's going to be one, but like, if they keep doing this, like we're going to be with these actors and these characters for a long time. And I'm loving that. Like we're getting such big things in the first go around. Very excited to see where we go.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to leave the tunnel of love. Unfortunately, it's like one of those big things, right? It's like the series as a whole, you always remember the tunnel of love because that's like such a big thing for these characters. I love that they devoted a whole episode.
Oh, yeah. It needed it.
Yeah.
It needed it.
So we get Annabeth walking in like a boss with that shield and delivers it to Ares. Ugh. So good.
What now, bitch?
Yeah. You dropped this.
Yeah. And that's right. We're both here.
Yeah. You left this at an amusement park just randomly. I got it.
Get us across the country.
So he follows through with his deal. And just like the book, he puts him into Kindness International Animal Transport. I am glad that we didn't really see any animals, right?
And I hope we don't.
I have a feeling we won't. Like maybe Grover will be uncomfortable, which is upsetting. But I'm glad we didn't see those like three.
There's three, only three.
Right? Yeah. Three animals in here. I don't need to see it with the balloon and being sad.
Yeah. And one of them has like a lollipop stuck to them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to see
that. All their food's mixed up. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But of course they're in there. And they're going straight to Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas.
To see Hermes at the Lotus
Casino. Hotel, casino. Yeah.
Ugh. I like how they're like, you know, each thing that's happening in the show is just like naturally happening, right? It's not just randomly like, oh, the thing broke down. Oh, we're in Vegas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I like how there's a point to this. But before we go, Grover delivers one of the best lines ever. He says, thanks for the emotional abuse and the cheeseburgers. Oh, and the ride. It's like, bye.
Snaps. These kids have had it. They've had it with these gods.
Especially Ares.
They're just like, enough. Because even Percy then steps up to him and is like, you want to play? It's going down.
This like 2 foot tall blonde kid that doesn't even know how to water bend correctly.
Yeah.
And the god of war. And he's like, you're going to find out. Punk. You're such an idiot.
I love it.
I love it. But like,
he's ready.
Oh my God. He needs to get his water bending under control before he tries to do anything.
I mean, we're just, it's good that we're at the place that when he is in a complete panic, he can make some magic happen that like saves them.
Annabeth in the water.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So we're there. We're at that point.
It's true. Yeah. And then they get in the thing and Grover's like, I know who stole the bolt. End of episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my God. Next episode.
On the next episode of Percy Jackson and the Olympian.
We get the Lotus Hotel and Casino. I'm so excited.
Ooh.
It's one of like, it's something that keeps coming up in the books, but it's also like such a fun thing that I feel like they need to redeem from the movie.
I'm very excited to see the the people there that are dressed in different decades mm-hmm. of clothing. That'll yeah. be really fun to see.
Also, we need to keep your ears out for the name D'Angelo.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
saying, any D'Angelos?
Mm-hmm.
Kids?
A brother and sister, perhaps?
Are you there? I do like, though, that they're introducing some of the gods that do play a big part in the series early, mm. because it's one of those things where you hear the names a lot in the books and then you don't see them until later on. But I like in the show that it's like, we're going to put faces to some of these.
But yeah, you get to put a face to a
yeah.
name.
Yeah. Do you think that we're going to get a musical number from Mr. Hermes?
100% absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think so? Like, Hamilton played on Disney Plus during the pandemic. You don't think that they're like...
He wrote the music for Moana. Yeah.
Disney likes him for his music.
I think it's just going to be a thing where he like gives them some money and they're like, thanks. And he's like, you're welcome.
No, I can't. I need more.
Because like, Maui was a god.
When we saw... Well, right. Yeah, it's true. It's all connecting. Because when we first saw him, when he was delivering Medusa's head, he was singing. So I'm like...
True.
Sing again. Like, just one. I wouldn't mind it.
Oh, I wouldn't number. Mind it.
Yeah.
But I think you have to pay the upper echelon of the Lin-Manuel Miranda fund, you know.
Like, I could just imagine stipend. They, like, go into the thing, and it's just, like, a big musical number. And it's like, welcome to the Lotus Casino. And it's like, here you can do rides, and you'll never have to leave. And it's like, you know, heavy-handed like that.
We're going to work on it.
Yeah, I didn't sing at all. I'm not going to sing now.
We're workshopping it. No. By the next episode, we're going to have a musical number.
Bonus episode, nothing but a musical.
Welcome to the Lotus Hotel and Casino.
Ugh, I don't think, I wouldn't do it. You're going to have to find another co-host for that episode. I can't sing. No way.
Mm-mm. Comment below. Do you want to be in our musical about the Lotus Hotel and Casino?
So, 3 episodes left, which is insane. There's so many episodes.
We still have a couple of states to get to, so they better travel fast.
We do. They got to go to Santa Monica because Percy thinks that Poseidon's going to help him. There's a lot.
Back to New York and
Underworld.
We go to Long Island again. We're in the Underworld. We got to get to Krusty.
Mm. All right. Well, oof. Exciting things are ahead.
The journey continues, folks.
I feel like it's only going to get more action-y as we go. You know what I mean?
Right after the musical number.
Right during
the musical number. Oh, fun. It's like the Pirates of Penzance.
All right. So till next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.